This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
The trial of Karen Reed, it has been beyond a circus, to put it lightly. There are not many trials that gain this kind of public attention, especially outside of the courthouse, for someone who is not a celebrity. Although Karen Reed has become one in her own right. Joining me to discuss where things are at in the case and the closing arguments that we saw, Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program with the FBI. I should note, as we are recording this, there is no verdict as of yet, but likely when you're seeing this or hearing this, there probably has been one. So we're going to just kind of give our own conjecture and talk about kind of how we feel the case landed before it went to the jury, or as it went to the jury. We got some testimony here and closing arguments from Lally and Jackson. We'll take a look at that. But before we listen to any of that, here we are. We're at the finish line. It's in the hands of the jury. How do you think this all ended, in your opinion?
I think defense did a great job. And the only thing that is raising my mind, or I'm just so curious about, the jury instructions. You know, and I know a little bit of the what was on the ballot became a little contentious at the very end. But I, in moments like this, I just want to know what was on the jury instructions. And when you read the charges, I went through and read the charges again. Charge was second degree murder, which in Massachusetts is punishable by life in prison with the possibility of parole. She's also faces lesser charges of manslaughter while operating a vehicle under the influence. That's the one that I think is going to stick in some way, because I mean, these people were so inebriated, and that's punishable from 5 to 20 years, and then leaving the scene of an accident resulting in death. That's another one that's, I'm like, I'm not so sure. But I think the driving a vehicle, operating a vehicle under the influence, I think that's going to be, if they're going to have a solid on anyone, it's going to be that one. Then it's going to come down to sentencing. That, again, pure conjecture, just from what we saw, just from all the testimony and the text messages and all the chaos, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they gave the jury some very viable options. There's not guilty, number one. And there was some issues I know that Jackson had with the options there, was not guilty. And then there was, you know, second degree, and then the other two that we talked about. But there was, what about not guilty for those other two? Like, well, not guilty means not guilty no matter what against all of them. So if she does get the vehicular manslaughter, that does mean not guilty of second degree murder. So I'm not quite sure what the issue was there, other than, I don't know, they just wanted more options on the ballot, or I don't know. But it seems like there's some viable options, but do you think we're going to get there, or has this case just been far too confusing to this jury, and there's too many possibilities of reasonable doubt that even the lesser of the two charges won't stick either?
Boy, that's the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. You know, as we're sitting here, cognitively and objectively looking at everything as much as we possibly can, we're not a jurist.
No.
You know, having my wife just gotten called to jury duty, going through the whole jury selection process again of one of two potential cases, one a murder case and the other a sexual assault case, you know, and looking at the jury pool and doing what I know and doing all this with you and being law enforcement, looking at the host of characters that are viable jurors and the process, you just don't know what's in that courtroom.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't take me all that long, or you, I think, all that long to deliberate what we think. That's why this is a great process. This is why we have faith in our institutions, organizations, because you have 12 people in there that are going to make a decision on this.
Yeah.
And it might take a while, because, you know, if someone comes in with some sort of confirmation bias, and either for or against, and they only heard what they wanted to hear, they didn't hear anything else, and now they're going to be arguing against this about, you know, and so I've been on juries as well. You just don't know what you're going to deal with in there.
Everybody takes everything through their own prism, and everybody's prism is a little bit different. And one may hear one thing one way and go, well, that's clear cut. The other may go, that's very questionable. It's all down to the individual. Let's take a look at some of the closing arguments. This is Lally talking about no conspiracy here. Let's take a look at the testimony.
Let me first just address Trooper Proctor. The text messages from Trooper Proctor are unprofessional, they're indefensible, they're inexcusable. However, as distasteful as those messages are, and their content is, I submit they had no bearing whatsoever or impact whatsoever on the integrity of the entirety of the investigation that Massachusetts State Police collectively conducted into John O'Keefe's death here. As was asked of Trooper Proctor on cross-examination, these were texts from his personal phone that he never thought would see the light of day. He was asked whether or not he ever thought that he would be asked about these in a courtroom, put to him as sort of a safe space, a safe place for him to discuss, if you will. What do you not see in those text messages? You don't see any discussion or any illusion of any conspiracy, of any framing of the defendant, of any planting of any evidence, no evidence whatsoever. Why? Because it didn't happen. There is no conspiracy, there is no cover-up, there is no evidence of any of that beyond speculation, rampant speculation and conjecture on behalf of the defense.
What's your thoughts on that? I think it was good that Proctor was addressed because clearly there's a lot of issues with him. And just kind of coming straight out of the gate going, look, yeah, Proctor's a problem, not respectable, but not something that affected the investigation. I could argue otherwise. I think most of us could argue that probably he had some sort of bearing on this investigation, considering he was the lead investigator on the case. It felt like it went a little stronger than just, I don't like Karen and calling her horrible names.
I wholeheartedly disagree with his premise of that.
Yep.
With you, I very rarely am like, sure. Nope, 100% no. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do not agree with that at all. It is scientifically not solid in the world of psychology. He clearly had a confirmation bias that he spewed.
Yep.
And because he was lead investigator, you think that that's not going to then set the tone of your entire investigative team? That's completely wrong. So in order for someone to bring an objectivity, we don't know his powers of persuasion and influence and control over the rest of the team.
Yeah.
So it definitely tainted everything coming in. It's a law of human nature that,
sure,
that happened. And so with that, I totally disagree with the statement at the end. The second half of it, though, that there's no proof of conspiracy. Okay. I didn't see anything that showed conspiracy, but we see confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Is confirmation bias unintentional confirmation bias a conspiracy? I think that's what the real question.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.